Okay, so let me start. Come on. Okay, so this is a claim that some people made before, that classification is the goal of science. We all aim to classify things. For example, finite model theory, it aims at classifying properties of finite relational structures by means of logics, logical definability. Complexity theory, what does it want? It aims at classifying combinatorial problems by computational complexity. And all these classification methods are only good if we can apply them, right? So what we want is the test bed to see if these classification methods are actually good, whether they actually work. Well, people applied finite model theory and complexity theory before, of course, but we always want a new test bed, something systematic, some large field of problems where we can just say exactly which problem has what complexity and probably logical definability. This may sound a bit vague, but as the talk goes on, you'll see what I mean by a good test bed. So in this talk, I will present such a good test bed. And in particular, it will go via a rather cool interplay of logic, complexity, and universal algebra. I don't mean to give you an exhaustive overview. There are many theories about the area. And also, I will not go into technical details. Never. I will focus on the flavor and the ideas. Well, in fact, even some of the technical claims that I will make will be, strictly speaking, incorrect. That's just because there are technicalities that I drop. Okay? So let's start. Here's a question for you. Two well-known problems. Thus, given a propositional formula in CNF, for example, one like this, is it satisfiable? Linear equations. Given a system of linear equations over, say, fixed field, K, does it have a solution? They are different problems. You can see that. But they have something in common. Can you see what it is? One. Huh? Yeah, that's what people usually say. But that's accidental. But the good point in this is that they have variables. That's good. They have variables, and what's more, the variables are essentially quantified. Brilliant. Anything else? The allowed combinations of values are restricted. They are constrained. And there are constraints on the possible combinations of values. For example, we can only assign values to x, y, and z such that this equation is satisfied. So, and again, we have three constraints on the possible combinations of values here and constraints there. So, what we want in both problems is to assign values to variables so that all constraints are satisfied. And hence the name, the constraint satisfaction problem. Constraint satisfaction problems, they come in several guises, depending on which area of mathematics or computer science they originate from. For example, if you have constraint satisfaction problems that come from logic or database community, they look like this. Given a finite structure or database, and the quintessential conjunctive first order sentence, or in other words, conjunctive query, does the structure satisfy the sentence? Well, that's a simple thing. And for example, SAT is like this. Well, three SAT, that was the example of my previous slide. Another form of exactly the same problem is this variable value problem. In this form, this problem appears in artificial intelligence and in algebra. That was my second example, linear equations, essentially. Given two finite sets, A, set of variables, and B, set of values, and a set of constraints, which constraint is a pair, a tuple of variables, and a relation on B of the matching arity. So if S is a free tuple, then R should be ternary. So we have a set of constraints like this, and the question is whether there's a function from A to B such that the image of every tuple of elements in A belongs to the corresponding relation Ri. Well, you can see that linear equations are like this. Okay? Every tuple is just the variables that appear in the equation, and the relation R describes the allowed combinations of values by this relation. Okay, another form, equivalent form, is homomorphism, which appears in logic and graph theory. It goes like this. Given two finite similar relational structures, A and B, is there a homomorphism from A to B? So let me tell you what this means. Well, I need to decipher this sentence. Well, given, it's clear, two, finite, means the sets A and B are finite. Relational means that the R's are relations. Similar means that the corresponding relations have the same arity. R1 has the same arity in A and then B. R2 has the same arity in A and then B. And what we want is a homomorphism from A to B, which is just a mapping from the universe of A to the universe of B, such that if you have a tuple in the relation R1, the image of this tuple will be in relation R1 in B, and so on. So every tuple in relation here must go to a tuple in a relation, in the corresponding relation in B. So let's see that these are in fact the same things. Well, the first two, you can see that they're the same, just expressed in different words. You can express all those things as atomic formulas. If you think that these are tuples of variables, and this means they are constrained by R1, so you can write it as a logical, as an atomic formula. R1 applied to the tuple S1. And then you take the conjunction of all those things and essentially quantify all the variables. So it's exactly the same thing. To see that these two problems are the same, it's actually very easy. So you just take this problem and you divide the constraints according to the relation that appears in here. Say, look at the relation R1. This will be our relation R1 here. Look at all tuples, look at all the constraints here where R1 appears, and take all the tuples of variables, the corresponding tuples of variables, and put them in the relation R1 in the structure A. So essentially, this is the same thing, except here the constraints are grouped by this relation over B. Okay? So hopefully I convinced you that these three things, they are actually the same. Right. And this is good, because every time we want to work with those problems, we can choose the form that suits us best at the moment. So, now, there's a fixed structure in the title of my talk, so let's fix it now. We fix the structure B, which is the structure over which we consider existential conjunctive first-order sentences, and in the homomorphism form, that's the right-hand side structure. CSP with a fixed structure B will be denoted CSP of B, or home B. So that's what it is. B is fixed, you're given structure A, doesn't have a homomorphism to B. And it's natural to ask this question, how does the complexity of CSP of B depend on the structure? So, there's a lot we can try to classify here from the point of view of computational complexity. Now, CSP of B, of course, can be viewed just as a class of structures A that homomorphically map to B. It's the same as the problem CSP of B, the membership of this class, right? Hence, We can try to get logic and finite model theory involved in another way. We can try to define this class by a sentence in some natural logic. And this is what we're going to do. Now, how does the definability of this class depend on B? Again, we can try to apply finite model theory to answer this question, to classify all relational structures. That's all we want. Let me give some examples. Graph coloring. If you take your structure B to be a digraph is a relational structure, a finite set and a binary relation on it. So CSP of H would be what problem? You are given a digraph G, does it have a homomorphism to H? And homomorphism again means an edge preserving mapping. So if you have an arc, an edge in G, you map it to H and you must get, well, you map the endpoints to H, and what you get in H must be in H as well. If this digraph H is just a K-click, then CSP of H is simply graph K-coloring. Because that's easy to see. If you have a homomorphism to a K-click, then you must have this K-click in your graph. Well, that's assuming everything is loop-free, reflexive. Okay, so these problems are extensively studied in graph theory. That was wrong. You're right. What I said about K-click, that if you homomorphically map to K-click, then you have K-click in there, that was wrong. What I meant to say, if you homomorphically map to K-click, then it's the same as K-coloring your graph. That's because adjacent things must get different colors. Thank you. Both of these problems, H-coloring and K-coloring, are studied in hundreds of papers in graph theory. So let's take the simplest case, K2, just one edge, undirected edge, and let's look at CSP for this problem. So what we have? We have a digraph, and the question is, does it have a homomorphism to K2, to the edge? We will try to define CSP for this structure, well, actually, co-CSP, the complement of this class. So these are the structures that do not map to K2. By sentence. I will define by sentence in the following logic. First order logic, extended with the symmetric transitive closure operator. Here's what it reads. This sentence 5. There exists X and there exists Y, such that there's an H from X to Y. And this says, take this relation between U and V. The relation says that there's a path of length 2 between U and V. And take the symmetric transitive closure of that. The symmetric transitive closure of that would be there exists a path of even length. And then apply this to Y and X. So the whole formula says there's an edge from X to Y, and you can walk from Y to X in an even number of steps. All in all, this says your graph has an odd cycle. Okay? You go from X to Y in one step, and then from Y to X in an even number of steps. So, clearly, well, I should perhaps say that CSP for K2 is exactly the same thing as two-coloring, and your graph is two-colorable if and only if it doesn't contain an odd cycle. So, this sentence precisely describes a bipartite, non-bipartite graphs. So that's co-CSP for K2. And since we can define this class in a formula, in a nice logic, we can also derive that CSP for K2 is belongs to the complexity class log space. That's just basic facts from descriptive complexity. If your problem is definable by a formula in nice logic, then it belongs to a nice complexity class. Another example. Transitive tournament. Take this structure, K. The base set is just numbers from 0 to K minus 1, and the arcs in this tournament are just all pairs of numbers, I and j, such that I is smaller than j. What is this problem? Well, it is easy to see that another digraph does not have a homomorphism to tk if and only if this digraph contains a directed path of length k with k arcs. Well, clearly, in this tournament, you cannot make k steps forward. Wherever you start, you cannot make k steps forward. So, this class of structures that do not homomorphically map to tk can be defined by this first order formula, which says you can make k steps forward. And in particular, this implies that the problem belongs to the complexity class AC0. Whatever it is, it's a tiny class, very small. Okay, another example, systems of linear equations. Consider this structure whose base set is ZP, and it has two relations, relation R, consisting of all triples XYZ such that X plus Y equals Z. And you also have one unary relation consisting of the number 1. Then this problem, CSP for the structure, is essentially the problem of solving systems of linear equations over ZP. That's just because every linear equation can be transformed in an equivalent collection of constraints that involve only equations like this. Now, this problem, of course, is solvable in polynomial time by Gaussian elimination, and actually it belongs to some complexity class called mod PL. I'm not going to talk about mod PL anymore. And from the definability point of view, systems of linear equations, they behave really badly. This problem is not definable in this logic, mighty logic called C omega infinity omega. That's the result of Patserius, Vulatov, and Davar. And what's this mighty logic? Formulas in this logic are built from atomic formulas like this. They must use finitely many variables. They can use negation and infinitary conjunction and disjunction. And they can also use counting quantifiers that say, well, there exists at least I elements x such that. This is a very powerful logic, and it can express awfully hard problems. And this simple problem of solving systems of linear equations is not definable in this logic. That's rather dramatic. Okay. One last example.
I don't understand the point. What do you derive from the fact that it doesn't belong to the
problem? Oh, I didn't derive anything. Okay. I just said my point is that some CSPs behave nicely, some don't. Okay. That's all. Yeah. Okay. Path system accessibility. This is a following problem. An instance of this problem is a structure with one ternary relation P and two unary relations, T terminals and S sources. And the question in this computational problem is whether there is an accessible terminal. And accessible means that it belongs to S, it's a source, or else A and B are already accessible and you can reach X from A and B via this ternary relation P. This problem is exactly the same thing as CoCSP for this structure BPSA, which is a Boolean structure, 0-1, has one ternary relation and two unary relations. Now, this problem is known to be P-complete, and we will define it in a good logic a little bit later. So, you see, CSPs exhibit quite a varying behavior with respect to complexity and definability. So let's see what we can say. Now again, this is what we want. We want to classify problems of the form CSP of B with respect to computational complexity, that is membership in a given complexity class, P and L, L, whatever. Modulo assumptions, complexity theoretic assumptions. And we also want to classify these problems with respect to descriptive complexity. That is definability of CSP of B in a given logic. First order logic, its extensions, finite variable logics, data log, whatever. Sorry. The biggest problem, the biggest open problem, the biggest conjecture in the area the Holy Grail of this area, is this conjecture of Hedder-Vardy, called the dichotomy conjecture, which states that for each structure B, the problem CSP of B is either tractable or NP complete. In other words, it cannot be NP intermediate. I will come back to this problem. It's just curious how Hedder-Vardy came to this conjecture. They also, yes? Well, you just take some natural logic, some logic that makes sense, and what you want to see is which problems CSP of B are definable in this logic, which are not.
Well, your logic is kind of fixed.
Well, yes, you can fix some logic that you like, yes. Well, you need to fix the logic that you like, yes. Okay? So, Hedder and Vardy came to this conjecture from logic as well. So, there's logic all around CSP. And that's the reasoning. A classical result of Ladner says that if P is not equal to NP, then there are NP intermediate problems. And what we want is some large natural class of problems where every problem is either in P or NP complete. Of course, we can just take the class of all problems that are either in P or NP complete. But that's not very natural. This is cheating. Yeah? Now, the classical result of Sagan says that NP coincides with the problems definable in existential second-order logic. Now, Hedder and Vardy took this existential second-order logic and defined a class called MMFNP, which is a subclass of NP, defined by simultaneously imposing three logical restrictions on the formulas. What they proved is that if you take just two of these three restrictions, then the class of problems that you get gives NP modulo P reductions, meaning there are NP intermediate problems in there. So, that's not good. That's not what we want. However, if we impose three restrictions simultaneously, then we get this class MMFNP. And what's known about this is that the class of all problems CSP of B is a subclass, proper subclass of MMFNP. And the two classes are the same modulo P reductions. Hence, if we can prove dichotomy for CSP, that every problem in CSP is either in P or NP complete, the same will be true for MMFNP, which will give us a large class of problems with a dichotomy. That's the reasoning. I'm not going to tell you what the restrictions are, but they are very natural. Now, okay, let's start our classification business. We start with the Boolean case. Boolean means the universe of B is 0, 1. There's a classical result of Schaeffer of 78, which started the whole CSP classification business. And Schaeffer proved that each Boolean CSP is either tractable or NP complete, and the non-trivial tractable cases are Toussaint, Hornsart, and Zio, and the systems of linear equations. These are all tractable cases, all the rest isn't P complete. It's a very nice theorem, cited everywhere. Now, relatively recently, Allender and a whole bunch of other people, they defined this classification and proved that each Boolean CSP is either in the complex class AC0 or else complete for one of the following classes NP, P, and L, parity L, and L. So, you touch all the basic nice complexity classes within NP. And then LaRose and Tesson provided a matching classification for this classification with respect to descriptive complexity. Okay, so the Boolean case is done. We know everything about it. Now, okay, let's go to logical definability. Indeed, what logics do we want to take? We want to take some nice logics. And the proposal was to take this logic called Datalog, which is essentially a database-inspired logical programming language. This is because this direction, logical approach to a CSP, was pioneered by Fokion Kalaitis and Moshe Vardy, so it's not surprising that they suggested Datalog. But then it turns out that it is also a very natural logic for CSPs. What's data log? Data log has programs. So we want to define problems by programs. A data log program is a sequence of lines. Each line involves predicates. Some of them are called EDBs. They are relations that come from the structure that you feed to this program. And other relations are called IDBs. These are the relations that you define from EDBs. So let's look at this program. It has one EDB, edge, and two IDBs, odd and goal. What does it say? It says if so what you feed to this program is a graph with the relation edge. What does it say? If there's an edge between x and y, add x and y to the relation odd. And the meaning of odd is, of course, there is a path of odd length between x and y. So if there's an edge between x and y, put x and y in odd. Now, if we already know that, the second line reads, if you can find z and t such that the pair x and z is already in odd, there's an odd path from x to z, and then edges from z to t and from t to y, then there's a path of odd length from x to y. So you have these two rules, and you apply them until you stabilize. And then the goal of this program, it's a unary predicate, either true or false. Initially it's false. It says there exists an x such that odd of xx holds, meaning there is a path of odd length from x to x, a cycle of odd length. So if you take a graph, feed it to the program works, it stabilizes, and then you look at the goal predicate. If it is still false, then there is no cycle of odd length in your graph. If it becomes true, this means that the program detected a cycle of odd length. This is how data log works. It's a bit like computing transitive closure of a relation. Step by step, you add new pairs to your relation. And here it's the same. Step by step, you add new tuples to the IDBs. So you compute the IDBs from the EDBs. And in the end, you look at goal and see if it's false or it became true. Now, so what this program tries to do is it obviously tries to derive new constraints on what's allowed. And it tries to get a contradiction to certify that there is no solution. Well, if you try to check whether your graph is bipartite, then this is what this program does. It derives new constraints, and in the end, we look whether there's a contradiction. Contradiction for two-colorability, meaning a cycle of odd length. Now, what does it mean to define a problem, a CSP of B, in data log? Well, actually, we will define co-CSP of B, the complement of CSP of B, for a good reason. Co-CSP of B is definable by a data log program, means that the program accepts precisely the structures that do not homomorphically map to B. You take your program that defines co-CSP of B, you feed a structure to it, the program works on the structure, and in the end, you look at the goal predicate. If it's false, this means that, this should mean that A homomorphically maps to B. If your goal predicate becomes true, then your structure does not homomorphically map to B. Here's an example I promised you to define path system accessibility in a good logic. Well, here's how path system accessibility can be derived in data log. Remember, in path system accessibility, we have one ternary relation. We have sources, and we have terminals. And we want to reach terminals from the sources. So here's the program. It says, everything that's a source is accessible. If X is accessible and Y is accessible, and we have P of X, Y, Z, then that is accessible. And in the end, it says, if X is accessible and X is a terminal, that's it. We reached a terminal from a source. So it is clear that this program defines precisely the structures that do not map to this the structure B psa. Now, what do we derive from definability in data log in terms of computational complexity? Well, if CoCSP of B is definable in data log, then the problem is in P. Why? That's because IDBs, the derived predicates, they have bounded arity. And hence, the program can only do polynomially many steps before it stabilizes. That's the basic reason. It's not very deep, it's very basic. When you derive new tuples for the relations, there are only polynomially many new tuples that you can derive. So you run this program and at every step, either you derive a new tuple in some of the IDBs, or you're stuck, and then you stop. Right. Now, why on earth data log? Indeed, you can take some other logic. Maybe you don't like data log, you like other logics. Well, it turns out that if you want to classify your problem with respect to definability in some other logic, then it's the same as classifying your problem with respect to definability in data log or one of its fragments. It just happens to be this. Well, first of all, of course, data log is natural for Hessian constraints, and then for every structure B, the following things are equivalent. CoCSP of B is definable in data log. CoCSP of B is definable in this logic. Existential finite variable logic, which has the formulas in this logic have finitely many variables. They can have infinitary disjunction conjunction, existential quantifier, but no negation and no universal quantifier. That's a rather powerful logic. You can relate this to existential Peebles games that are studied a lot in finite model theory. So, these are just some examples. You can come up with more. And this is equivalent also to the fact that this class is definable in this counting finite variable logic, infinitely finite variable logic that I mentioned before, where you can use counting quantifiers as well. And this is a recent addition that follows from the result of Atrius, Bulatov, and Davar that I mentioned before, and the result of Barton Kozik that I will mention later on. So you see, definability in data log for CSPs is equivalent to definability in lots of other logics, including some very powerful logics. So data log is a natural thing to look at. And if you take some, what did I want to say? You can come up with other logics, logics other than those listed here, but then you can derive similar results that will involve not data log, but some fragments of data log. So, yeah, the moral of this is this. Data log is natural for CSPs, and we should like it. Okay, let's carry on. So, first of all, I want to get rid of CSPs definable in first order logic. That's, of course, that's the first natural thing to look at from the point of view of finite model theory. First order logic. This is the example that I already gave you. Transitive tournament. It can be defined by a first order formula and also by the following data log program. Well, it has just one line. And it says, if you can make k steps forward, then you reach your goal. Okay, so we've looked at this. What's special about this data log program? It's non-recursive. The power of data log is that it recursively computes IDBs from IDBs. Here, there's no recursion. And it is pretty clear that if you're definable in non-recursive data log program, then you're actually definable in first order logic, in existential conjunctive first order logic. No, in positive first order logic, existential positive first order logic. That's sorry. And here's a theorem, which was proved by Alberto Tsiriez and then followed by a mighty generalization of Rossmann. It says that for every B, CoCSP of B is definable by non-recursive data log program if and only if it is definable in first order logic. Well, this direction is trivial. What's non-trivial is the other direction. If it's first order definable, then in fact, it's non-recursive data log. So this just says that first order definability for CSPs is equivalent to definability in non-recursive data log. And these structures that are actually, whose CSPs are actually definable in first order logic, they have been described, characterized in several equivalent ways by Laroze, Lott, and Tardif. And I'm not going to tell you what the combinatorial conditions are, but the point is that these conditions are simple and can be checked. So there's these structures are fully described. There's a nice dichotomy for definability in first order logic, the result of Laroze and Tesson, which says that for any structure B, CSP of B is either first order definable or hard for the for the complexity class log space under first order reductions. And what's interesting about this is that it gives you a proper dichotomy without any assumptions. Anything that's first order definable belongs to this complexity class non-uniform AC0. Again, the complexity class defined by Boolean circuits, and I'm not going to tell you what it is, but it's tiny. And it contains all first order definable classes. And it's a proper subset of log space. So it's one of those happy cases when we actually know that the two complexity classes are different. For example, parity is an L, but not in this non-uniform AC0. And hence we have this dichotomy and also the equivalence between F4 definability and membership in non-uniform AC0. Okay. I promised you algebra. Where is algebra? Now that first order definable CSPs are out of the way, we can do some algebra. Here's the definition. It looks big, but it's very simple. We say that an Emory relation R is invariant under an Emory operation F, or, in other words, F is a polymorphism of R, if the following holds. You take n tuples in your relation, put them like this, apply F component-wise, you're going to get a new tuple. This new tuple must belong to your relation R as well. That's the definition. To make sense of it, let's look at an example. Take this relation from the from our structure BPSA. This is a ternary relation, which contains all triples of 0, 1, except this one triple 1, 1, 0. It's a relation. It says X and Y implies Z. The binary iteration minimum is a polymorphism of this relation. What do we want to check? We want to check is that if we take 2, so mean is binary, which means we need to take 2 triples in your relation in our relation R, and we apply minimum component wise, then what we get is a tuple in our relation and not this one. Well, indeed, how can we possibly get this tuple if we apply minimum component wise to 2? Tuples in R. The only way to get one here is to have 2 1s. The only way to get one here is to have 2 1s here. If you want to get to have 0, one of these things must be 0. So, if you want to obtain this tuple, one of these tuples must be this one as well. And not in R. So, this little argument shows that indeed minimum is a polymorphism of this relation. When we apply component-wise to 2 triples in the relation, we get a triple from the relation. The binary operation maximum is not a polymorphism of R. Can you spot why? Yeah? 011, 101. Yeah. There are lots of things you can take, and you can easily obtain this this triple by taking maximum of two triples in the relation. Okay, fine. Now, we can consider polymorphisms of a relational structure. What's a polymorphism of a relational structure? It's an operation that is a polymorphism of every relation in the structure. For example, minimum is a polymorphism of this relational structure, BIPSA. Well, we have just checked that it's a polymorphism of the ternary relation in the structure. What are the other relations in the structure, BIPSA? They're just two unary relations. One is a relation consisting just of zero. Clearly, it is preserved. If you stick two zeros in minimum, you get zero as the output. And the unary relation one is also preserved. If you stick two ones in minimum, you get one as the output. Now, the same thing, the same as the first line, can be expressed as follows. F is a homomorphism from the Cartesian power of B to B itself. It's just a little small thing that you could note. And to make it again a little bit clearer for digraphs, what does this mean? For digraphs, this means the following. If you take n vertices in your digraph and edges that go like this, you apply F component-wise. Well, component-wise this time means this way, yeah? And on the previous slide I applied F like this, but I think it's equivalent. So what you get, essentially if you apply your operation to N edges, you get an edge. That's what it says. Okay. Where's the algebra? Here. So we can take our structure B and associate an algebra to it, which is the same universe B and the set of all polymorphisms of B. Okay? So, we take a structure, which is a set with a bunch of relations, and form an algebra, which is a set and a bunch of operations. And the interesting fact about this is that the computational discretive complexity of CSB of B is completely determined by the properties of this algebra. And the intuition for this is as follows. For any relation R, your relation R is definable in your structure B if and only if it has all the polymorphisms of B. So basically, the polymorphisms, they control what you can define. That's the intuition why this holds. Now, okay. We want to classify relational structures. We move to algebras. Do we gain anything at all? Okay, we had relations, now we have operations. What's the point? And, excuse me, the pun, the structures don't have enough structure. There's structure in algebras. That's what's good about them. You move to algebras because they have structure in them. And what structure? I'm going to tell you a little bit about the structure in algebras. I will tell you about the mysterious five types that appear in algebras. Ignore this conservative bit for a while. Let's assume that we have a structure B that contains all unary relations in it. Let's just look at structures that are like this. And fix some two-element subset in such a structure. Let's assume that the elements in X are 0 and 1. Just call them 0 and 1. Now, each polymorphism of B preserves X. That's just because X is a relation in B, and polymorphisms, they preserve relations. In algebraic lingo, this is pronounced as the algebra is conservative. This means that every operation in the algebra preserves every unary relation. In other words, you can take any operation, any polymorphism, and restrict it to any subset, and you get a proper operation on that subset. Now, so take this two-element set 0, 1. It turns out that this set X can be assigned in this algebra one of the five types. Only five types. Why is that? There's an old result of Emil Post, also from logic, by the way, which says, well, it says many things, but in particular, it says that there are only five possibilities for this set. What's this set? You go through all possible polymorphisms of B, you restrict them all to 0, 1, to X, and then you stick the constants inside. So this is some set of operations that you get, a set of operations on 0, 1. And this set can only be one of five things. It can contain only essentially unary operations, that is, the operations that only depend on one variable. This type is called unary. It can contain all linear Boolean operations, the operations that look like this. This type is called affine. This set can contain all possible Boolean operations, then the set is called Boolean. All monotone Boolean operations, the type is called lattice. Or all operations are of the form minimum of something. This type is called semi-lattice. Only five possible types. If you look at the richness of these sets of operations, they can be naturally ordered. In this way, unary type, only unary operations, affine type, linear operations, semi-lattice type, minimum or maximum, this depends on what you call zero, what you call one. Lattice type, minimum and maximum, and Boolean type, all operations. So this diagram, it simply shows inclusions between those sets. Now, I define the types in conservative algebras, you can define them in general algebras. And there's a theory developed by Hobby and McKenzie in the 80s called tame congruent theory, which assigns the same five types to local behavior of general algebras, finite algebras. But this time local has a much more involved meaning, not just a subset. I'm not going to tell you what it means, local behavior in this sense. It's rather technical. Now, there is a very advanced theory developed by algebraists since then, but it focused on congruences, whatever congruences are. And how this theory is used in CSP is as follows. If you have some types in your algebra, certain types, this implies hardness results for CSP. I will show you how. And inexpressibility results. And if you don't have those types, then you want to get positive results for CSP. Definability, good complexity. Now this last bit, getting positive results, what does it require? Basically it says you avoid some of the bad types, you have only good types, which means locally, local behavior is good. But then you need to learn something about global behavior of your relations. And that's the difficult bit, to get results describing good behavior, good global behavior of relations from the knowledge of nice local behavior. So this requires new structural theory that focuses on relations, and there's a massive attack by universal algebraists on this at the moment. And I just list some names here. These are the people who attack CSP with the algebraic means. Okay, now, I will relate those five types to logics and to complexity classes. I will start with the algebraic dichotomy conjecture. This is a refinement of the Fedor-Vardy conjecture. Recall that the Fedor-Vardy conjecture says every CSP of V is either tractable in P or anticomplete. This conjecture says which things exactly are anticomplete and which are tractable. How do you read this? You read this as follows. If you have unary type in your structure, so if there is, for the conservative case, if there is a two-element set which has the unary type, then you're NP-complete. If all your two-element sets in your structure behave nicely, which means you can have these four types, then the conjecture says then you're tractable. So this conjecture was made by Andrei Bulatov, Pete Jamison, myself, ages ago. That's a conjecture. Is it clear what it says? If you have local behavior that is unary somewhere, then you're in P complete. In all other cases, that's a conjecture, you're tractable. And there are some results towards this conjecture. For example, for small structures that have less than four elements, it's confirmed by Bulatov, and for the conservative case, it was confirmed by Bulatov in 2003, and Libor Bato gave a new, very simple proof of this conjecture. It says 10 should be 11, because Libor presented this result yesterday. Okay, and there are other results. So, there is an attack on this conjecture, and eventually it will be cracked. Yeah, and by eventually, I mean rather soon. We will live to see it. Right, fine. Data log. Yep.
Are the factors we consider all finite?
Yes. Sorry. Did I mention? Yes, every all structures are finite.
So then you can decide which type you call.
Yeah. Okay, definability in data log. Now, this affine type. This affine type actually corresponds more or less to solving systems of linear equations. And I already showed you in the beginning that systems of linear equations have very bad behavior with respect to definability. You remember, they are not even definable in this counting infinitary logic. So in particular, they are not definable in data log. And LaRosse and Zadary showed that if you have these two types in your structure, then you're not definable in data log. And they conjectured that in all other cases, you are definable in data log. So there's, again, very nice correspondence between types that appear in the structure and definability. Very nice conjecture, and it was actually confirmed very recently by Barton Kozik. So that's settled. That was a major open question. It's solved. Excellent. Now, it's getting more interesting, right? We have other types and other logics and other complexity classes. So what happens if we slash it like that? Interesting. Okay, let me tell you a little bit about linear and symmetric data log. These are fragments of data log. A data log program is called linear if every rule looks like this. You have some IDBs, which are denoted by theta here, and some EDBs, which are the Rs. And in every rule, well, in this part of, well, obviously this part of the rule must be an IDB. In this part of the rule called the body, you can have one IDB, if you just drop the parenthesis, or no IDB at all, if it looks like this. These are linear programs. And the program is called symmetric if it is linear, and in addition, it is invariant under symmetry of rules, which means the following. If you have a rule like this, where theta 2 is present in your program, then your program also contains the rule obtained from this one by formally swapping the IDBs. Like that. Now, definability in data log, in linear data log, gives you membership in NL. Automatically, and definability in symmetric data log gives you membership in log space. And why is that? Well, via one-line intuition is this. Since your program is linear, you look for a derivation path. You want to derive goal in linear fashion. So it's like a directed reachability in the digraph, which is an L. And in the symmetric case, because of the symmetry of the program, it's like reachability in a non-directed graph, which is log space. That's the idea. Okay, let's flash it like this. LaRosse and Tesson showed that if you have one of these three types, that you're not in an L and not in linear data log. And they conjectured that in all other cases, meaning you just have these two types appearing in your algebra, that you actually, you are in an L and you are in linear decalogue. So in particular, this conjecture says that the only reason for a CSP to belong to an L is by definability in linear decalogue, which is rather interesting. This conjecture is still open, but there's a very recent result by Bartokosik and Willard that settles this conjecture in a rather large part over the dashed line. So some part of the conjecture is still open, but it's not big. Maybe very hard though. Okay, I'm not going to tell you what the line means. Believe me that it's a huge chunk of the conjecture settled. Okay, there's one last case left when we flash it like this. And you can guess what it gives us, huh? Again, LaRose and Tisson show that if we have any of these four types of unary of local behavior, then we are not in log space and not in symmetric data log. And then they conjectured that if you have just the Boolean type in your algebra, then actually you are in symmetric data log and in log space. Brilliant. Well, this conjecture is perhaps the most open of all the conjectures that I mentioned. There are only a few results here. It looks more or less like this. These are the things that are known. And all the rest is open. There's a Boolean case that settled some other case, and there's a case of, yes, 1 minute, of graphs extended with all unary relations. That's a result by, Agri, myself, and LaRose and Tisson. So, there are some results confirming this conjecture, but this one is the most open conjecture. Okay, now let me justify the title of my lecture. Now, what's CSP of V? It's the problem of evaluating existential conjunctive first order sentences. Of course, you can choose some other subset of things and study the complexity of evaluating first order sentences with this fragment. For example, yesterday, Florent Madeleine presented a full classification of this problem for this fragment, where you have both quantifiers, conjunction and disjunction. The interesting thing is that if you pick some subset X, then there are some appropriate algebraic objects for it. They do not behave as nicely as the algebras, but still, there's algebra everywhere. The important case is when X is this, universal quantifier, essential quantifier, and conjunction. This gives you the so-called quantified CSP. There is some algebra works there as well, some algebra. And there are many partial results in this direction, but there's not even a good conjecture which QCSPs are tractable. That's pretty dramatic. And finally, what you do, you evaluate your sentences over a structure. And this structure, in principle, doesn't have to be finite. It's fixed, so it can be infinite. And there's lots and lots of work and nice progress made by Manuel Bodirsky and his co-authors. Yeah, that's, one can speak for an hour just on this line. But I don't have another hour. So I stop here, and here's a picture to take home. Here. Not really. Well, in principle, you can take any structure.
Yeah, but for what you know. For
the result, it's mostly countable. Right. Thanks, Martin.
Good time to plug what's happening. happening at the Fields Institute starting on Sunday. If you like what you saw here, then there'll be an intensive 2-month program